What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we will be discussing something I feel we don't talk enough about, anxiety. We are living through a pandemic that may very well change how and if we do certain things moving forward. It can cause our minds to worry and run wild. Anxiety has and continues to impact me personally, and only recently have I accepted this and begun to address it. I'm really looking forward to today because anxiety can be crippling and impacts a lot of people. I have a licensed therapist on the podcast today to give us 5 actionable items to get our minds and bodies in a more relaxed state. With that, I'd like to introduce our special guest. Elena Brubaker is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She graduated from the Marriage and Family Therapy Program at University of Rochester. Since then, she has worked as a therapist in an OBGYN clinic through U of R. She has also worked in the college counseling world at Hobart and William Smith, RIT, and Roberts Wesleyan. 3 years ago, she started her own private practice and has been building her business ever since. Elena's specialty is women's mental health, helping women through anxiety, depression, trauma, and general life transitions. So with that, I'd like to welcome Elena. Hi, Elena.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having me on.
The pleasure's all mine. How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty well. I'm glad it's Friday.
Amen to that. Let's dive right in. So tell us more about you, Elena. Where are you from? What makes you tick? And how did you wind up in the health and wellness space?
So I'm from Northern New York originally, an hour north of Syracuse. And then for the past 11 years, I've been in Rochester. I came here after college and I've been here ever since. Rochester has that way of kind of drawing you in and keeping you here. And what drew me to the health and wellness area was in college, I took this family systems course and it just like clicked in my mind, like, this is how I think. This is how I think. This is how I'm always putting the pieces of life together. And I never realized there was a name for it. And I certainly never realized there was a career for it. Growing up in a rural area, I didn't know any therapist. I didn't really know all the options of having a therapy degree. And so that made me really interested in what could I do in this field. And I discovered the field of marriage and family therapy. I got a therapist mentor, and that just set me on the path of the therapy world and pursuing that. And so then after college, I took a year off and then went and got my MFT at U of R.
Very cool. So you're from the North Country. I didn't know that.
I am, yes.
Whereabouts? Up in the Adirondacks?
The Watertown area.
Watertown.
So it's a really small town called Adams Center, like population maybe 2,000, something like that.
Very cool.
Yes.
And now college, we got mutual friends, right? You went down to Houghton?
Yes, down to Houghton. So that's very also cool. A very small rural area. So Rochester has been the big city for me.
So let's talk about stress and anxiety. What exactly is stress and anxiety?
Yeah, so stress and anxiety, those words are often used interchangeably, but they're actually different. So stress is a response to a threat in a situation. Stress is something that's happening externally. It's an external trigger. And then when the stressor is over, when that situation has resolved, then stress has resolved. So it's happening externally. Like for example, if you were in an argument with a friend, that would cause you stress. But when that argument is over, if it's just stress, that stress will be gone after the argument is over. How stress and anxiety are linked is that stress is a common trigger for anxiety. So like with that argument with a friend, if it's anxiety, after that argument, you're still going to feel worried. You're still going to feel kind of on edge about that conversation. And you might be thinking about it the next day, even the next week, you're still worried about it even after that situation is over. So anxiety is internal. It's happening inside your mind. Your thoughts could be racing. They could be spinning. Your mind is all over the place. So it's happening persistently and excessively. So some of the symptoms of general anxiety disorder are difficulty controlling or stopping the worry. So you're trying to tell yourself, like, stop worrying, stop thinking about this, and you just can't stop. And then when you're feeling worried and on edge and apprehensive more often than not. So more of the time you're feeling that worry and that dread, and more than you're feeling, you know, happy and grounded and kind of centered.
Yeah, selfishly, I'm really looking forward to today, because I deal with that internal anxiety, and I feel like I have my whole life, but I didn't know what that meant through middle school, through high school, even through college. Really until I started working. And I think a lot of it for me was I was comparing myself and concerned about what other people were thinking of me. And that was just causing anxiety to rise and just me to get away from who I really am and how I should be acting. Yeah. And then just physically, it just causes symptoms and mentally. So I'm looking forward to these tips today. But why is it so prevalent in our current society?
Yeah, I think this question is really Pandora's box, because I think there is so much in our society that's contributing to anxiety. And one is just what you talked about. There's a lot of pressure and expectation in our society. And some of that is perceived. Some of that we're putting on ourselves, but some of that is external. Like what we have on our plate on a day-to-day basis, working a full-time job, having hobbies, doing volunteer work, trying to be physically fit, trying to eat well. Then if you add kids on top of that, like, it's just, there's so much to manage on a daily basis. And I don't think we have a society that values rest and that values downtime. I think what we hear and what we see in media is just like, go, 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 be busy, be active. And we don't hear a lot of messages about taking care of ourselves and finding our own balance and our own rhythm and, you know, how to create harmony in our lives. I think we just have this busy on the go culture. I also think right now, it's important to mention social media. I think social media has brought this all up to the surface and intensified these feelings of anxiety, because now we're looking at hundreds or thousands of people's lives, seeing their highlight reel, seeing all that they're doing. And then we're feeling like, I got to do the same stuff. And that person is doing it without any issues. So like, what's wrong with me? And that's making us feel anxious and worried and feeling like we're not measuring up and we're not good enough because we're comparing ourselves to other people's highlight reel. So those are just a few of the things in our society that I think are contributing to anxiety right now.
While I'm thinking of this, I just want to get your take on it. Social distancing. I hate that term. I think it should be more physical distance. Because
agreed.
Socially, we're already so disconnected as a society. I feel like we need that. We're craving that as human beings. And it's only getting worse right now. And I don't really see that ending anytime soon. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. I don't think we needed more reasons to just connect with people online. And so it does make me sad for people, because I think people's worlds have went more online. And I think in general, that's not great for people. That's actually another thing I wanted to mention, that spending time on screens, research is showing that that's contributing to anxiety and depression. And so I do feel worried for people that more and more time is happening on screens, and that's more of how people are getting their connection. And I think that's creating more anxiety and more depression. And I think having one-on-one connections with people and hearing deeper things, more vulnerable things, that's what helps us feel less isolated and less alone. I think making superficial connections online is contributing to feeling isolated and feeling alone. Like, you could be talking and seeing what people are doing all day, but if you're not having those deeper conversations, those more vulnerable conversations, then it's not going to help you feel more connected to people.
So it's very temporary. It's very superficial, right? That dopamine hit that we might get connected with someone on the screen, but
And I think you can, like, I think it's possible online to have deeper conversations,
right?
But I think you have to be really intentional about how you're going to do that and who you're going to connect with. And there's just, there's more room for someone to just leave that conversation or not engage in that conversation online. Whereas if you're in a face-to-face conversation, you're more likely to continue to engage. And the temptation when it's online is you can leave it at any time. You can leave that person and they can leave you.
Yeah. You and I both know this. I mean, we were just talking about this before I started recording that, you know, I think you prefer face-to-face with your clients. I know I do. Mm-hmm. I did a couple Zoom calls during the pandemic, but it just wasn't the same. You know, I really crave that face-to-face interaction with a patient because then they start to open up and we get somewhere.
Yep. And what you might not be disclosing when you're behind a screen, there's so much you can't see. Facial expressions and body language. And there's so much value to that face-to-face. And so I hope we're going to continue to find ways to do that safely, find a way to have that face-to-face dialogue, because I think there's nothing that can compare to it.
Now, are there good types of stress?
Yes. So you probably remember from high school health class, the U stress, and that's the good type of stress. So that could happen with exciting things like hobbies, spending time with people that you care about, learning something new. That's the good type of stress. Stress that is exciting and fun. And I think that's important to note because stress gets a bad rap, and we have this idea that, like, we don't want any stress in our lives. And the truth is, without stress, our lives would be pretty boring. They'd be pretty dull without stress. So we do want some stress. I think it's just important to be mindful about where that stress is coming from. So even if it is a good type of stress, you need to be aware that this is still stress here. And then I thought it's important to note too that there are good things, happy things, exciting things that happen that still cause stress. So something like moving into a new place or starting a new job or having a child, these are all things that feel like they're really exciting. They're happy things. And we don't often equate those with stress. And what can often happen with these good types of stress is they kind of knock us over. Like, if you've ever moved places, if you've ever moved, like, we moved from an apartment to a house, and after a couple of days, I was like, oh my gosh, I am so burnt out. I'm so, on edge and irritable. And I didn't factor in that this is still stressful. So I need to be compensating for that stress. Even when it's something exciting, I need to still be taking care of myself. And so that's something that to be aware of with good stress, even though it's good, even though it's exciting, you still need to compensate for that stress and make sure you're taking care of yourself. Make sure you're aware of how it's impacting you. Because a lot of times with good stress, we just kind of charge right through it because it feels like, what could be bad about this? What could go wrong here? You still need to take care of yourself when you're having good stress.
Now, would you consider yourself an anxious person? If so, how do you deal with this?
Yes. So I would say I trend towards anxiety. I wouldn't say I have general anxiety. You know, I don't have anxiety all the time, but when there's increased stressors in my life, anxiety would be kind of my go-to feeling. Whereas I think other people, they might trend towards depression or avoidance or over-functioning. But I would say I trend towards anxiety when I have increased stressors in my life. So there's been a couple things that I've worked on that have really helped me with anxiety. The first one is deep breathing. that's where I started when I first started experiencing anxiety, which was in grad school. I started doing deep breathing. First, I got my own therapist. But then I started deep breathing and I started practicing it multiple times a day. At first, you don't notice a difference when you start deep breathing. You're like, this is stupid. This isn't working. But it's one of those things, the more you practice it, the better you get at it and the more effective it is. So deep breathing is definitely one of my go-to anxiety coping skills.
What does that mean? Can you go through that? Can you go through an example with us? Is it belly breathing?
Yes.
Is it like a 3 second in, 4 second out?
There are so many different breathing techniques. I'll share with you my favorite. Mm-hmm. So it's deep breathing, the spelling of your name. So if we're doing your name, Matt, you would inhale an M and then you would exhale an A, inhale a T, and you spell your whole name, first, middle, last name. Anytime you get distracted, you start back at the beginning and you do that for however long you want to. I used to do it on my drives.
I like that.
To and from work. It's a great thing to do in the car because there's nothing else you're doing in the car. You can do deep breathing. Why I like the spelling of your name is that it keeps you on track. What I found with deep breathing is my mind would wander, which is a symptom of anxiety. Like your thoughts are racing. And so I would start deep breathing and then I'd be thinking about, you know, what I had to do the next day. I'm like, when did I stop deep breathing? I have no clue when I stopped doing this, but when you spell your name, it really keeps you on track with breathing. And then once you stop spelling it, you realize that, and then you go back to the beginning. And one important point I always make sure to tell my clients this too, is don't judge yourself for getting off track. That's what a lot of people do, is like, I can't believe I can't even spell my whole name. I keep having to go back in the beginning, and they're judging themselves and being critical. And that is counterproductive to this. So be gentle with yourself, be patient with yourself, just go back to the beginning, but try not to be critical or judgmental.
Deep breathing, spell your name. I like that.
Deep breathing, spell your name. It's been my go-to for, probably 8 years now. And I share it with all my clients, and mostly everyone loves it. There's some people who just deep breathing never connects with them, but for most people it does.
My middle name too?
Yes, my
middle name?
First, middle, last.
All right, perfect. The
yep,
whole name.
First, middle, last. Yep. Because then you really have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I use in my life is mindfulness. And so mindfulness is this practice of staying in the moment and being in the present. And I've found this to be so powerful in my life, not only with anxiety, but in being able to just be wherever I am. So if I'm at work, I'm at work. If I'm home, I'm home. If I'm in the car, I'm in the car. Because what I was noticing with anxiety is like, anxiety just is taking you all these different places. And I realized that was robbing me of being in the moment. And so,
especially with kids.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And it's so easy. It's so easy to be thinking about what you have to do next, but then it's taking away from your time. And so, mindfulness is a huge practice for me. And when I find myself back into anxious spaces, I really try to up my mindfulness practice of just focusing on what's going on around me. And I can share a specific technique when we talk about our five techniques, but that's a big one for me. And then I'll just add one more, which is self-compassion. I had noticed when I started therapy that, or I think my therapist probably pointed it out, but that I was really critical and judgmental of myself. The way my internal voice was pretty negative. And that's a anxiety fuel. When you're judgmental and critical and harsh with yourself, that only fuels anxiety. And so when you can be gentle and kind to yourself and just kind of treat yourself like you treat other people and talk to yourself like you talk to other people, that can really slow you down and center you and ground you and kind of remember what you value and what you care about. And so I found self-compassion is a great way to slow me down and kind of combat anxiety.
Now, is mindfulness meditation, or are they different?
they can be linked. It's kind of like stress and anxiety. They're linked, but they're different. So meditation, I would say, is something that's more formal. It could be a practice. Like, there's tons of apps online, or there's specific scripts you can go through. But mindfulness, I would say, is more of a way of life. You could be practicing mindfulness and be playing on the ground with your kids. So there's nothing formal that's needed. It's just this practice of consistently bringing yourself back into the moment. So say like you're playing with your kids and your mind starts to go over to whatever anxious worry you have. And then you say, no, I'm coming back here. Let me look at this block. Okay, what color is this block? It's red. What does it feel like in my hands? I'm holding my daughter's hand. What does it feel like in my hand? What's the temperature? How does that hand feel? So it's just bringing yourself back into the moment. And why I like mindfulness better than a formal meditation practice is it's so practical. You can practice it every single place you are, even some place that you don't want to be. Like in a waiting room in a doctor's office, you can be mindful there. You can be present there. So I like mindfulness.
I think for me, a lot of it's this, the cell phone. So I put a little shelf up by my door when I get home. I just put this right in the shelf and then that distraction's gone. Good. I'm much more present. Yes. I don't do it every day. And the days I don't do it, I'm very distracted. I'm not mindful. I'm not present.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Well, and I think it's this temporary way to deal with anxiety. But I think what it's doing is increasing anxiety. Because like, think about how much stuff you're doing on your phone. You're checking your messages, then an email comes in, then you're on social media, and then you're, you know, researching something online, and that's all spinning in your brain. And that's feeding anxiety, because that's what anxiety is doing. Anxiety is spinning thoughts, and your phone and being on your phone, that's spinning thoughts too. So it really, I think the two of those together are pretty dangerous, a dangerous combination for anxiety.
I need to get better with it can wait. You know, an email can wait till the next day, a couple of days later. They don't need that instant gratification of hearing that response right away. You know, it can wait.
So true.
And it's the field where it's nice. We're with clients and patients. And then once we leave, we're not treating them at home. So leave your work at home or leave it at work.
Yes. And I have found that everybody understands if you take a day to get back to them. Mm-hmm. And if they don't understand, maybe they're not the best client for you or the best friend for you. Like if someone is requiring a response from you within a minute, maybe they're not the best person for you in your life.
They need to listen to this podcast then.
Hopefully those people are listening and they stop doing that. No pressure. But there's a lot of things you can do with your phone. Like I've started leaving my phone downstairs and not sleeping in the same room as my phone. So I started doing that. I don't have email notifications coming up. I actually have gone one step further and I can only check my email on my iPad. So it's not on my phone at all. So there's lots of things that you can do if you feel like you need to create some distance between you and your electronics. But I think your phone is one distraction from mindfulness because it's so easy. Like you're in a waiting room. You don't want to be there. You scroll on your phone. But then that's not practicing things that maybe would keep you more grounded and keep you more healthy.
Huge trigger. Absolutely. So you already gave us a couple, but what are a few more actionable tips to lessen our stress and anxiety?
Yes. So we have deep breathing, the spelling of your name. Journaling would be a really big one. And this does not have to be fancy. You could go in the note section of your phone and just like rapidly type out everything that you're thinking. There's something that I call a rage page. So if you're feeling really anxious about something, you just write all your unfiltered thoughts down. Write all of them down. They could be nasty. They could be rude. They could not make any sense. But there's something about getting those thoughts from your mind onto paper that is really powerful. And then for some people, once they've written something down, it can go out of their minds. they can release it because at least it's somewhere else. Like they don't have to hold it in their mind anymore. They can put it down on paper. I just practiced it that I was having a situation I was pretty anxious about with some people in my life, and I'm not ready to have a conversation about it with them, but these thoughts were swirling and I'm feeling the anxiety train coming. And what I did was I sat down and I wrote an email to them. I didn't send it, didn't even put their names in the title, but I wrote all of my thoughts down in an email. And that helped me release all that anxiety I had been carrying just by putting it all down on paper. So journaling is a big one for me. It's a big one for a lot of my clients. Then I would say having something physical, like a physical go-to. For me, it's walking. I think it could be, you know, if you can't get out and walk, you could just do some jumping jacks in your living room, do some push-ups. But having something physical, I think, is a great way to get out of your head and to get into your body. So that's a big one. I think having a go-to physical, or it could be just stretching on the floor. I think it doesn't have to be fancy. It can be a really quick thing, but anxiety just wants to keep you in your head and keep spinning those thoughts, and to do something physical is really helpful to get into your body and give your mind a rest. And on that same vein, progressive muscle relaxation is another big one I recommend to my clients. So it's, do you know what it is?
I do not, no.
Okay. So it's this practice of tensing and releasing different muscles in your body. So you start with your feet, you tense your feet for 5 seconds, you release them for 5 seconds. Then you go to your calves, tense them, and you go through your whole body. Anything that has pain, don't do that area of your body, but you go through your whole body, and then at the end, you tense up your whole body, 5 seconds, and then release it. And this is another one. The more you practice it, the better you get at it. But this is a great one for recognizing what tension feels like, and then also teaching your mind and your body how to release that tension, how to let go of that tension. So that's a big one that I practice, and I have most of my clients practice. And most people, if they've really given it a chance, do feel like it really helps. And then they might have like a shortcut, like they just tense their fist and release their fist. And that's their reminder of like, let go of this anxiety that you're holding, like release it. So after you get good at it and practice it, you can have kind of this progressive muscle shortcut. And then for mindfulness, a specific practice you could start with, there's tons of mindfulness practices if you look them up, but you could start with just naming five of the things in the room you're in. So use your five senses. So what's one thing I can see? What's one thing I can touch? What's one thing I can smell, hear? Go through your five senses. And that's just a way to keep you present in the room, in that space. I do it a lot of times on walks. When I'm walking, I'll use that five senses activity just to get me into that moment. I think there's so often that we are thinking, and we're not noticing anything that's going on around us. Like, I don't know if you've ever went on a drive and you like miss the fall foliage because you are thinking too much, you're inside your head too much, and like, oh, the fall foliage is gorgeous, and I've been driving for 20 minutes, I haven't even noticed it. So mindfulness is a great practice to help you actually notice what's happening around you.
You know what else helps with that is starting a podcast, because I'm trying to make the podcast less of like an interview style and more conversational. And it's so easy for my mind to wander and not even listen to what you're saying and think about the next question.
That's true.
And it's really helped. It's really helped me actively listen a lot better.
Yes.
Because I want to jump in and try to be the expert like I just did to you just now. Go ahead. okay. So were you going to say something? Finish your thought.
I think that's my five, right? That might have been more than five.
I think you gave us, the hashtag rage page is the best right there. I love that one.
It's such a good one. Like I haven't ever done that and not felt some relief.
Yeah.
You know, just get it all out.
Those are all good. So I tend to burn the candles at both ends. I tend to be a workaholic, but I love what I do. I'm working on having a better balance. I love serving others, helping other people, growing my business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just very important to me. But I understand the importance of meditating, of going on a vacation, but I can't just hop on a plane every weekend and get out of here. I can't necessarily just start meditating, you know, in my office. So like what is your personal go-to if you had to choose one of those, or maybe a different one?
Yeah.
To kind of calm your inner chatter.
Yeah. So I like this question because I think a lot of people think managing their stress, managing their anxiety isn't going to be feasible for them because they're super busy. They have a ton going on. So they're not going to have time for coping with anxiety because they can't go on a vacation. They can't do something that costs more money. So I think it's really important to find what could be sustainable, what can be practical in your day-to-day. And so I think actually all of these that I talked about could be really practical things. Like for you, if you're in between patients, like take 1 minute to do that deep breathing exercise before you get your next patient. But I think what this is, Matt, is being intentional about how do I want to cope with anxiety today? So I'm going to be intentional about after each patient, I'm going to do this 1 minute of deep breathing. Or during my lunch today, I am not going to look at my phone. I'm just going to eat lunch. And I'm going to be present eating lunch. And I'm just going to focus on eating lunch. So I really think it's not about having extra time or doing something additional. It's about finding what in your day can you integrate any of these coping mechanisms, because we do have time for them. We just don't choose to integrate them. Like on your drive, we have time to do deep breathing on our drive. We're just not choosing to do it. So I don't think it's about doing something extra or buying into something, but integrating it into the spaces you already have in your day.
Make it a priority. Yeah.
And it doesn't take extra time. I always tell my clients this because they're like, I don't have time to do it. It's like, you don't have to have extra time. What are you already doing? Maybe in the shower, you could use mindfulness in the shower. Maybe you're walking to work. You could, you know, even from the parking lot into your building, you can do deep breathing there, or you could do mindfulness there. Or the other thing I mentioned before, self-compassion. That takes no extra time because you already have this internal voice that you're using in your head. And so you can practice replacing critical thoughts with compassionate thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to simplify it because these are really hard things to practice, but I think just to make the point that you don't have to have extra time. It's just about shifting those priorities and making this a priority.
All right. You're holding me accountable here. Once a week, I'm going to shut the radio off in my car, driving to work, and the podcast, and just have a silent ride and be mindful.
Silent ride. It's hard, Matt. It's really hard.
I was going to say every day, but once a week.
Okay. And then I think bump it up. Yeah. I think bump it up to more, but I think good to start with once a week. And I think you'll find when you start doing that stuff, it's really hard because we're used to so much chatter. But I think that chatter is not helping our internal chatter. I think it's feeding it and it's swirling it and it's probably making it worse.
Now off script here, what's your favorite meditation app?
Headspace. Have you heard of Headspace?
Mm-hmm.
They have some really good, like 2 minute, 3 minute. They have deep breathing, they have meditation. And so that one seems very user friendly and very practical. Like it doesn't have to be this big, huge deal.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about you now. Let's talk about your practice. If you're accepting new patients, et cetera. So tell me more about your practice. Where is it? When did it start? And who do you serve?
Yeah. So I started my private practice in the fall of 2016, and I specialize in women's mental health. So I mostly see women, and I see probably a quarter of my practice is couples. But women, I have a specialty in perinatal mental health. So it's pregnant women and postpartum women, but I see women of all ages. But that would be my specific specialty. I am in Penfield, but moving to Pittsford, that Allen's Creek area.
Nice.
And so I'm going to have a full-time space over there, which I'm really excited about. Unfortunately, not accepting new clients. But I am in this next year hoping to do more workshops, both online and in person when that is deemed healthy and safe. And then more speaking engagements. I'm hoping to get into businesses, talk about things like this, like how to manage your stress. I think there are so many workplaces that need to have more of a mental health focus. So in the next year, I'm hoping to ramp up that area of my practice.
I saw you did a workshop at the Rock Brainery. What was
that? I did. So that was, I think you'd be interested in this, Matt. It's this idea of can't do it all. So it takes the idea that our society has presented to us that you have to do all the things all the time and do them all well, and broke it down into how that's really not sustainable, how that's really not healthy, and how it's really not person-centered. So stop living your life for other people and start living the life that you really want to live. And that's really best and healthiest for you. So to get out of comparison culture, get out of, you know, feeling like you have to meet everyone else's expectations and start figuring out what are your values, what are your priorities, and how can you live your life reflective of those values and priorities instead of everybody else's.
Sounds like a good one. Yeah. I'm going to have to come to that next time you do it.
You could. Yeah. It was really well received. And I think this is, like we talked about at the beginning, something that a ton of people are struggling with in our society. And I think we're getting a lot of unrealistic messages about how much we need to be doing.
So let's talk COVID-19 here. So how has your business been affected and how have you pivoted?
Yeah. So right away when quarantine went into effect, I just, before they made that mandate for businesses, I went fully online. I thought I'd rather be ahead of this than behind. So I went fully online and had a lull in my practice for a couple weeks where people were just figuring out, how long are we going to be doing online sessions, and what is this quarantine really going to look like? But then after it was clear that things are going to be online for a while longer, most of my clients came back. I started to get some new referrals. So I've been online since March, and just this month have started transitioning back to in-person sessions, which has been so nice and so energizing to have people come back in person again. So I was really thankful that I have been set up with and comfortable with doing video and doing things online. And I have my own HIPAA compliant platform that was easy to add video sessions to. So I had to pivot that quickly, but thankfully it was pretty seamless for me because that's something that I already mostly had in place. Whereas I know other therapists who weren't maybe savvy with online therapy and just online platforms really struggled with figuring out how to transition their practice online.
Now, how can listeners connect with you online to hear more about your workshops and content?
Yeah. So the biggest place I'm on is Instagram. I really enjoy Instagram. I have a lot of fun over there. I love to talk about mental health, as I think you're getting. So I'm pretty active on Instagram. My handle is Elena Talks Therapy. So yeah, any of your listeners who want to come follow me over there, I love to connect with people, and I'm always willing to set someone up with a therapist. Even though I'm not taking new clients, I've been able to connect people with therapists who are taking new clients. So anyone who wants to follow me can join me over there, and that's where I'll post workshops and new content and things like that.
Yeah, I definitely love what you're doing on Instagram. It's very clean. It's very consistent. You do a really good job with your brand. So good job. All right. Final question. Am I cutting out? Can you hear me?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Final question. So if you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here, where would you take them?
Okay. I love this question because I love all things Rochester. So, I'm doing a day. I took a day for this. So I would start at Ugly Duck Coffee. I'm a big coffee fan. Ugly Duck is one of my favorite coffee shops. Then we'd go over to Cobbs Hill Park. It's a great place to walk around the reservoir. Go to Village Bakery for lunch. I think everybody needs to hit the Pittsford Canal and Pittsford Dairy. And then I think High Falls is an underrated area in Rochester. So walking that bridge over High Falls, those cobblestone streets, and then dinner at the Genesee Brew House overlooking the falls. Those would be my places.
Talk about calming down anxiety. That sounds amazing.
Right?
That sounds perfect.
Thing.
I'm going to do that.
I love when people come to Rochester because it's my favorite thing to like curate a day for that specific person. And I think that is very calming, actually.
That's a perfect day right there. That's a great answer. I love it. Well, Alina, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate what you're doing for our community. I know that your plate is very full. You're a wife, you're a mom, business owner. You got a lot going on. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Matt. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value and will share this with family and friends to spread the wealth of knowledge that Alina gave us today. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, DriscollChiropracticNY.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me, info@DriscollChiropracticNY.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram, @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.